Can't believe in my life. Say that you won't believe in my All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, October 19th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find our their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side. Okay, we're going to take up tonight's scripture reading, pick up where we left off last week. We're in Matthew chapter 11. Ten, so we're going to be reading chapter 11. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're going to be reading chapter 11 today. So Matthew chapter 11, and it's read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 11. And it came to pass, when Jesus had made an end of commanding his 12 disciples, he departed thence to teach and to preach in their cities. Now when John had heard in the prison the works of Christ, he sent two of his disciples, and said unto him, Art thou he that should come, or do we look for another? Jesus answered and said unto them, Go and show John again those things which ye do hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he whosoever shall not be offended in me. And as they departed, Jesus began to say unto the multitudes concerning John, What went ye out into the wilderness to see? A reed shaken with the wind? But what went ye out for to see? A man clothed in soft raiment? Behold, they that wear soft clothing are in kings' houses. But what went ye out for to see? A prophet? Yea, I say unto you, and more than a prophet. For this is he of whom it is written, Behold, I send my messenger before thy face, which shall prepare thy way before thee. Verily I say unto you, among them that are born of women there hath not risen a greater than John the Baptist. Notwithstanding, he that is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John. And if ye will receive it, this is Elias, which was for to come. He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. But whereunto shall I liken this generation? It is like unto children sitting in the markets, and calling unto their fellows, and saying, We have piped unto you, and ye have not danced. We have mourned unto you, and ye have not lamented. For John came neither eating nor drinking, and they say, He hath a devil. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, Behold, a man gluttonous and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. But wisdom is justified of her children. Then began he to upbraid the cities wherein most of his mighty works were done, because they repented not. Woe unto thee, Chorazin! Woe unto thee, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon at the day of judgment than for you. And thou, Capernaum, which art exalted unto heaven, shalt be brought down to hell. For if the mighty works which have been done in thee had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I say unto you that it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom in the day of judgment than for thee. At that time Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in thy sight. All things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father. Neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light.
Okay. Tonight I was going to do a subject, I was going to do something with a PowerPoint, but I've got too many technical things going on here, and my windows are just jumping all over the place. It's just too confusing. So what I'm going to do is we're just going to go to announcements, questions, and then we'll move over to Brent, and then we'll open an open forum. Jan, do we have any questions? Well, before we go to questions, do we have any announcements? Or Terry? I saw Jan before. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, announcements, no. I do have a whole bunch of questions, though.
All right, let's go through some questions and see what we can do.
Okay, the first one, I'll kind of paraphrase it because it's pretty long. This fellow was driving his deceased mother's car, and a cop pulled in behind him. When he stopped, the cop came up, and the fellow wanted to know why he was stopped, and the cop said, well, it's registered to a dead woman, so. And he said he smelled pot, and then things evolved, and the driver was cuffed and taken down the station, and his passenger also. And he has an attorney or a lawyer, and wanted him to make a motion suppressing the evidence for unreasonable search and seizure, or no probable cause to make a traffic stop. They found a scale. They found a couple baggies, whatever that is, meth and some needles in the car. And the lawyer refused to file those. So then he went into the hearing, and he went scheduled for 2:45 in the afternoon. He went in at 2:40, got right in, and they were just finishing up the status conference, so he was excluded. The question is, what should I do about my lawyer not wanting to file the stuff, and can they legally start court before the scheduled time if I'm not present?
Well, I presume he's in a regular town court or something. Does he say?
Yeah, it sounded like a town cop stopping. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have no idea. You know, it's amazing that certain scales are against the law if you got them in the trunk of your car. I mean, that's so ridiculous. They tie that into drugs as if you're a drug dealer or something. And baggies. Did you say there were things in the baggies, or just had baggies?
Well, it just said they found a couple baggies. It didn't say what they contained.
Well, baggies, so big deal, you know. Even the fact that the car belonged to someone who is deceased. You know, hey, time. You do what you got to do as time allows you to do it. What difference does that make? It's registered for them. They got it going. Anyway, what are they charging them with? I missed that.
Well, it didn't say directly, but it sounded like it was possession.
Possession of a scale, huh?
Well, no, the baggies and the meth. They found some meth, too, and they found some needles.
Well, the meth isn't good. And when the needles are together, that's not good either. Well, you know, look at, again, they don't have the jurisdiction, but jurisdiction is an uphill battle. Anybody following along what's going on in the courts with us today, they'll see that jurisdiction is a huge battle, although we do have some other things happening. We're kind of picking up a new procedure we're going to try to start. I'm not prepared to speak about it yet. I was hoping I would be, but I'm just not. I'm writing some papers right now, and if I can get them done this week, maybe I'll be in a position to maybe put it together pretty good and articulate it well enough. But it's an interesting way to approach the problems that we have in courts. And but I'm not going to touch that subject matter right now. The only thing, look, at he's got a lawyer, you know, and the drugs are the problem. Even drugs, in its sense, you know, if you're selling it, it's a problem. If you're just using it, it's a different story. But it's a problem either way you go. You can challenge jurisdiction; they're going to ignore that, and you can just move it into federal court on your own, and then challenge the jurisdiction in federal court. You're there for cause, and that's the only way the federal court can hear anything that has to do with any of the people. Is they can hear the case on certain issues that are constitutional issues. And, for instance, that court doesn't give you due process, so that could be shut down if you could win that through the federal court. The problem is look at all these other courts really have learned from the big boys, so to speak. They've learned from the federal courts. The federal courts are destroyed, totally destroyed. They're unrecognizable. And this has been for a long time. You know, as we've been speaking about this a lot for quite some time now, the Rules Enabling Act of 1934 and in 1938 when the United States Supreme Court committed the greatest treason ever in our nation by abrogating common law and replacing it with civil law. That's not what a constitution has. Our constitution has law and equity. And even their equity is horrific. It's not constitutional. It doesn't follow American jurisprudence. So it's an uphill battle. You know, we do expect once we get onto the other side to get justice. But again, we're looking at something that's very interesting that might assist us in the problems we're having to get justice in the courts. And maybe next week I'll talk about it. But first I have to, you know, write some papers on it and make sure that I understand where I'm going with this. Just some ideas were shared with me by someone else. And we'll see where that goes. And I think it's going to give us a really good advantage. That and the fact that we're getting close to the other side. You know, and I think the other side's going to happen not long after the election, probably before this year is out. Definitely by next year, but, you know, because it's, you know, what we're going to about to go through, what the American people are about to go through with the revelation of reality and the fact that they've been living in fiction for so long, and the narrative of the elite has controlled not only this nation, but all the nations of the world, the entire world. And we see a lot of problems taking place even in other countries. And this thing with China thing, you know, it's really, really much worse, so they claim, in many, many other countries. And they're going through some really, really hard times, much worse than we're going through. And you can imagine how bad that would be, considering if you're living in New York or certain places where, you know, we have some crackpot governor, they're tyrants and they're traitors, and they have no concern, you know, for the people, and no respect for the Constitution, and they just ignore it. So again, justice is not going to be had till we get to the other side. You can try to settle it probably through your lawyer, since you got a lawyer, and it sounds like they're coming out after you criminally. You could try to pull it into the federal court for cause. It's an uphill battle. You have to run that case. A lawyer will never run that case for you. It is possible to win, depending on the judge you get. I've got a listing of all of the judges that President Trump nominated since he became president, and there's quite a few. And we found some in the Southern District, no less, which is kind of surprising. We heard about this, and we found one that looks really, really good in the Southern District, and he's on the appellate level. So we're going to be doing something potentially with Trump judges.
John.
And we'll try to create a plan. But
And they were charged with, when the smoke cleared, a party to a crime.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, they make these things up to begin with, and they make the rules up as they go. They change them accordingly so that things work in their favor. It's just really, it's a horrific. So anyway, that's what we're up against. He's in a tough situation because it is a criminal thing. He seems to be chasing him, and he's got a lawyer. Like I said, I would see what the lawyer can make a deal or something, make sure he don't go to jail. That's the key thing here. But if that comes, push comes to shove, you know, again, you can take it to federal court for cause, challenging jurisdiction, because they don't have it, really. But someone has to go into that federal court and make that argument, and your lawyer is not going to do it. So if you're not educated enough to be able to do that, then you're not going to be able to do it. And this is why it's so important that people educate themselves. You know, we've got the book out, Government by Consent, and that's going to be followed up probably in the beginning of next year with another book, which will be called Court Access, so that people will know how to write papers, what the forms are, the procedures, maybe how to make some certain arguments and certain different things, and put as much as I can together on that. So between the two books, if you're not qualified and able to represent yourself, your liberty hangs in the hands of a bar attorney. It's that simple. And that's a problem, because bar attorneys are not going to go outside of what they are taught. And they are taught to maintain the status quo, and the focus is on civil law and civil rules and procedures. Common law is out the door. Maxims are irrelevant. They don't listen to maxims at all. And any court that doesn't adhere to maxims is no just court at all. That in itself is a maxim. That's the problem we have. But again, we have lots of indictments that we've done, over 100. We've got lots of habeas corpuses that were never addressed, were hidden or thrown out of the courts. We've got non-judicial foreclosures, taking of homes without due process, and they've been ignored by the courts, and that's why we've indicted all these judges that have refused to obey the law. But we're going to go back in all these cases. We're going to be testing a new thing out on two cases we've got going. I got an IRS case, and we've got a case against Google, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And so we're going to be working that new, plan, so to speak, on that, see how it goes, and then we're going to execute it. I think it's going to work well, too. And then we'll execute it on all of the cases that we have. You know, we've been building all these cases because the end results, really, is with all these cases compiled and brought together, it proves RICO. And the federal judiciary is guilty of RICO. And I wouldn't say every single judge is guilty of RICO, but I do know all of the judges that I've come in contact, they're all part of the game maintaining status quo. But again, Trump has put in quite a few hundred, I think 200 and some odd judges. Anybody know the number on that? 200 and something. I got it written down somewhere. But maybe we'll bring that up next week, and I'll share the list of judges that we have, those who are chosen, who have been appointed by President Trump. All right. Anyway, there's nothing more I could say about that case. What's the next question?
Okay. How many copies of Government by Consent for sheriffs have people donated money for thus far?
Well, this is embarrassing and depressing, but not many. I don't know if, let's see. I don't have an actual list. Francine, if you're available and you're listening in, if you want to pipe in and give a number, I don't know. I've been sending all of the information out, and it's being put into spreadsheets for mailing. But I'm really kind of depressed since that subject is brought up, that people are not doing the things that they need to be doing. It's the duty of the people to do what has to be done. Anybody whose eyes have been opened, who have come aware of the problem and realize that the only solution is education, they should be doing something like getting your sheriff a book and yourself a book, spreading the word, getting other people involved, coming to the meetings and getting involved and working together so that we can get the grassroots up and going because we need to be doing that. So anyway, Francine, do you have a number? I don't know if she's here right now.
I'm here. I'll have to go find it, John.
All right. Anyway, it's going to be a depressing number, everybody. I was going to post the number of the books up on the webpage, but I've been hesitant of doing that. But look, if the people want liberty, they're going to step up and do something about it. If they don't want liberty, then they'll leave it up to someone else. And if you think Trump is going to save this nation and maintain it for the next 100 years for your children and your children's children and your children's 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 children, forget about it. And I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you because it's not going to happen. Thomas Jefferson was absolutely crystal clear. Without the education and the knowledge of how this all works, you cannot have liberty. You have to be a participant. We have to teach our children to be participants. We have to teach them through, we have to get education going in schools. You know, Trump has been talking about this recently. And that's a good thing, but we need a proper education. Hopefully we're going to get a proper education. People need to be taught the truth about what these courts should be. They should not be what they are. They have robbed us blind. You know, we did a PowerPoint a couple of weeks back. I think it was on the 5th. Someone wanted a copy of that, and I'm going to post it up on YouTube. As a matter of fact, I got that almost together, and I'll probably post it up this week, maybe tomorrow or the next day. But I got to finish it up. I'm cleaning it up. And that PowerPoint laid out how this country pretty much, you know, things came to be. And then all of a sudden, you know, the assault upon, you know, our founding documents and upon us. there is, well, maybe I'll talk about that in a minute. But let's see if any other questions. And Francine, okay. You can pipe that number up if you want when you get a chance. Visual. I got my, you wouldn't believe it. It's like Christmas tree on my computer. Things are just blinking all over the place. But go ahead.
Is there any way to access the Patriot Soapbox Live platform now that everything is censored? Does Ollie or anyone have a plan? I'm sure that everyone by now has experienced the YouTube shutouts.
Oh, yeah, X22 is down. If anybody wants to go listen to X22, you got to go to x22.com, and you can watch the latest there. They do ask for your first name and your email, and they send you an email to tell you that when the next video goes up. I know X22 is off. How's things going on the Patriot Soapbox?
They have two alternate sites. I'll find out. Let me see if I can get it up there tonight.
And I've got three now.
Yeah, so we're on there. They're up and running. So
let's get that out into our email too. Communicate that information with Jan when you can.
Yeah, should be able to get on. I mean, they expect me to be there on Wednesday, so I'm assuming everything's up. I mean, it's just not through the normal their normal channel thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, yes, you know, look, you know, it's about ready to hit the fan. It's already hit the fan. I mean, look, anybody listening to the latest, the Trump's rallies and stuff, he's really hitting hard on the criminal activity stuff. So, and things are being released, evidence is being released, it's pouring out, he's priming the people.
Yeah, and they're doubling down on the COVID because that's the only thing they got right now. And so they're getting very, very draconian with the whole, you know, if you leave New York or come into New York because we had a death in the family and they got to come up from North Carolina, they expect them to quarantine 2 weeks after they get here.
So I guess they'll hold the body over, huh?
No, they're talking about the people coming up here.
I know, but in order to go to a funeral or something, they're going to have to hold the body over.
They want to know where they're going and that they're going to quarantine there.
This guy's a nut. This guy is just insane.
It's kind of like somewhat, what do you call it, on your own, but it's not really. Because if they catch you, they give you a $2,000 fine. So, you know,
well,
if you're
I heard
using
that
your
he's,
cell phone,
he's canceling Thanksgiving too, and I guess that means that the cops will be patrolling the streets, and if they see a lot of cars in the driveway, you know, they'll pull in to see if there are people and stop making arrests. So I don't know what they plan on doing. These people are totally insane.
I think we should have Thanksgiving and make him the turkey. What do you think?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And New Year, they cancel New Year's too. New Year's is canceled. No New Year's here. I guess he's going to cancel Christmas also. You know. But New York is pretty bad. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Any other questions?
Yeah. On X22, if you go to their site, you can subscribe for, I think it's $29 a year to his new server, which is safe. Or he also posts on three other sites.
Yeah, I was kind of confused on that because I went out to his site and I clicked and I put my email in, but the latest was up there. I was able to listen to the latest. And then I clicked on it today to go out and because he sent an email. When I sent it, got the email, I clicked on it. It looked like he had to join up like he was saying. But I'm not sure if that's – that may be to see everything. I don't know. I haven't figured it all out
yet. BitChute
has a lot of still up.
Yeah, he tells you which – he's got three other channels he's putting things on. BitChute is one, and the other two are some that I had not heard of yet. So you can still watch it free if you want, or you can sign up for $29 a year or whatever.
Well, if anybody wants to sign up for $29 a year with that service or whatever, maybe they should sign up with us for $5 a month first, you know? You know, look, we have to do what we – only the people can save America. And if we don't get enough people involved, you know, look, we're looking to try to get out there to be interviewed in different places. And we'd like to get interviewed by X22. But there's numerous places we need to be interviewed at, and anybody that can get us interviews with any of these people on YouTube that have, you know, large followings. But a lot of these people might be shut down by the time we get around to being interviewed. Who knows? But being interviewed, if we get interviewed and get some exposure, you know, to 500,000 people here or 300,000 people there or 50,000 people over here, you know, then maybe we'll get enough people that are willing to, you know, put out the money to get themselves a book and their sheriff a book and spend time and actually step up and take the positions that need to be taken. Because we still need to fill a lot of positions. We've only filled just over 1,000 people. Let me go take a quick look on the website and see how many people have signed up for becoming administrators on the grand jury, on the jury, trial jury and grand jury, you know, to orientate the juries. We got 1,200 people so far that have signed up, and hopefully they haven't fallen away, but we have 1,200 people. We actually need about 12,000 people altogether, 12,000 to 15,000 people across the nation to fill all the positions just to take back the courts. And then with the committee men, we need at least 5 people per county, okay? And we got 3,000 plus counties, so, you know, that's 5, 10, that's another 15. So we need about 30,000 people across the United States. Now, when you take a look at the population of the United States, 30,000 people isn't that many, really. And if we can get the word out to enough people, if we can be exposed to 50,000 people here, 100,000 people there, 20,000 people here, 500,000 people there, if we get that kind of exposure through interviews, we probably can get enough people interested to come in. We're looking for that critical mass, you know, it's still slow going. But we do have we got almost 9,000 members now, so another 50 members and we'll have 9,000 members. But with 9,000 members, it is a little depressing that we've sold so many books, so little of number of books at this point. We need to educate ourselves and we need to educate our sheriffs. I can't say it enough. Next question.
Okay, John, after listening to your idea of writing textbooks for schools, you discussed on Monday the 13th, it got me thinking. I'm running for school board in Old Bridge, New Jersey for the school year 2021. My goal is to get into the curriculum committee and bring core curriculum of American history, civics, and capitalism as mandatory courses to enable our schools to create generations of productive, independent adults. I want to write the American history course in digestible nuggets to reach young students. I have a mental synopsis of what I want to include in the course. How do I proceed in doing this?
Well, I'm kind of approaching the same thing. I mean, we collaborate. I talked with Brent a little bit about this, and Brent seems to be interested also maybe in collaborating and trying to do something with textbooks. You know, it's you know, something I've never done or never thought about how I would even doing it, but you got to realize that, you know, we have, you know, the lower grades and the middle grades and the upper grades, and so we have to write them accordingly, you know. And we need to introduce children. There has to be a plan from A to Z, you know, and what we want to introduce and really where we really want to bring them to by the time they get into the high school, you know, grade 9, 10, 11, and 12. So we want to prime them in the first 8 years, and then really by the time they get out of school, by the time they come out of the 12th grade, we need to give them enough of an education so that they understand their heritage, they understand government by consent, they understand the duties that are required upon them and any American, so that they should be, you know, involved and become a committee man at least once in their life, respond to the jury call, to understand how the court system works, and be able to defend themselves in a court of law. To be able to write their papers and put things together. All this they need to know, and they need to understand how government works. So this whole thing, you know, first I think we have to draw a map of where we need to start at the lowest level and where we want to get to at the highest level, and then kind of work it in between to try to figure these things out. So, the more people we can be involved with this, the better it would be. Anybody who thinks they are in, anybody who is inclined and thinks that they're able to participate in putting these things together, maybe we should form a group to create this stuff. But we have to create a roadmap. What I would like to do is take some of the curriculum that's existing out there. And that's something I haven't really investigated into. If we take some of the curriculum, take a look at some of the curriculum that's out there right now and see what they're teaching as far as American history is concerned, because that's about the only thing they are teaching is American history, but even that, it's like pablum. They're not really giving them the really powerful stuff and the truth of the matter. And then maybe we can work off of that. I don't know. So I haven't formulated a plan. I don't have time to think about it at this moment. But I think after the courts open up and we can accomplish something, maybe 6 months down the road, maybe we can try to come together with something. What really is horrible is what the Bar Association has done. And the last thing we need is for them to get involved in writing books, because they get involved in anything that has anything to do with anything. You know, in school, you know, you have to, I don't know if anybody homeschools or have tried to homeschool, you know, you have to participate with certain curriculum, and you can't go outside of certain to other curriculum that you might be more interested in if it's not approved by, you know, the school system. That becomes a problem, you know, and the lawyers have created the reality, you know. They control the pharmaceutical companies. They control the medical system. They control our medical, you know, any of the coverage that you have. They control all that. They control. We got 80,000 lawyers, over 80,000 lawyers in Washington, D.C. working as we speak. Think about that, 80,000 lawyers. What do you think they're doing? They're running this country. Anytime you have a problem with any bureaucrat, the next thing you know, you're talking to a lawyer. Anybody that has gone to bat up against these people, you find you're facing a lawyer. They control the courts. They control our legislators. They were controlling our president. And to some degree, they still do. But we got lawyers that I think are good, and they're focused in on the equity and the law that really, of course, empowers the president. So, but it's a lawyer's world. The devil is ruling. I don't know. Anyway, what else we got, Jim?
The dictator Governor Murphy in New Jersey is destroying businesses and people's lives in the Garden State. I want to unite these business owners in pursuit of a federal lawsuit against the tyrant. I know Attila's Health Club and Union Hill Gun Range have all suffered financial losses due to the tyrant shutting down their businesses. I want to speak to them and encourage them to file charges. Is there any way that we can help them?
Well, there's a lot of people that need help, and I got to get back to you. You need more people to help people. We don't have enough people schooled enough to be able to help enough people, so it's kind of tough. Again, it gets back to an education. You don't have to be a lawyer to be able to do these things. You don't have to go to be, study to become an attorney and learn all of the equity, particularly because that's what they like to teach you. Of course, it's called civil law, so you got to work with all that equity. But with all that, ultimately, civil law. It's not even equity, it's civil law. But it's just the procedure and the process and understanding that maxims control the court. That's what natural law is all about. It's maxims that control the courts. God wrote the laws into the hearts of men. Good and evil, they all know right from wrong. They all know the law ultimately. When someone is injured, then there's a court case. Whether you're the injured party and you're filing a case against someone else, or if it's a criminal injury or something, whatever the case may be. But it should be ruled by the facts. We don't need precedents. Precedents is something made up by lawyers. That's what they call common law. Just think about that. Precedence to them is common law. And of course, then the other side of that coin is the civil law. So they say, oh, we use common law too. We use civil law and common law. Because civil law is really, a contradiction in itself also, because according to the United States Supreme Court, if you go up onto their website, they fuse together natural law, or common law, they said. They fuse together common law with equity and call it civil law, and that's what we're under. So the rules of civil procedure also that guides the whole process. Rule 2 got rid of the Constitution. But, of course, they were working on that for a long time, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away. And, again, we went through this back in October 5th, I think it was, a couple of weeks back. I'll get that up on YouTube shortly, and hopefully they won't shut our YouTube down, but we'll see what happens. And I'll try to get the written, maybe the PDF form of that YouTube, so that'll be available also, so it'll be in subject matter. But ultimately, a lot of this stuff is already up online. If you go up onto our website under Grand Jury and come up Action Against the Judiciary, a lot of the things that we'll be recording as far as subjects would be concerned has been written in memorandums. And we've got lots of memorandums up there. And, of course, we've got a lot of papers that we've written to the courts, and each one of those papers have numerous subject matters with inside them. So, again, these are all things that we're really turning into using the PowerPoint and creating a YouTube program. I would like to do one of these a week on Monday nights. I'm trying to work out, but with the technicians here that control this platform that we use in order to come to a meeting, but they got so many problems. They have just moved over to being able to run a MP4 off of the broadcaster here on this channel. And what that means is they gave me a place where I can go and change what's called a WMV, which is a Windows Media Video, okay, WMV, change it to an MP4. And once you change it to an MP4, you load it up. But their MP4 is limited to 200 megabytes, and that's not very much at all when it comes to videos. And when you dumb it down, break it down to less, and you pop it up, visually things are blurry, and then you have the audio, it's kind of choppy. It just doesn't work, unless they're expecting you to do maybe a 10-minute PowerPoint, and that's it. So I was going to do one tonight where I was going to do the PowerPoint and read through it, but there's too many problems tonight on my side, so I can't do that. But anyway, we need to get these up onto the YouTube and hopefully do maybe something every week for 20 minutes or a half hour, laying some subject matter out, taking a deep look. Like law and equity, we've spoken a lot about it, but let's really look at it, law and equity. Let's see and understand where it comes from and see how what it is and what's the difference between that and civil law or the difference between law and equity in itself. And take a real hard look maybe at Rule 2 and the rules of civil procedure altogether. You know, they got some good procedures that are fine, that'll work in equity courts, but they certainly will not and cannot work in common law courts. It's, you know, those kind of rules are a problem. They're problematic. All right.
Okay, I have two questions on the government by consent book, and I'll just read them together. You can address them both at once. They're just short. How will we know for sure that the son of a bitch will read the book once he/she has received it? And the second is looking to order some books for a local sheriff, but I'm not sure it's a good idea to have 1,000 pages. Only the scholars will take that kind of time. I think the sheriff handbook makes more sense for them.
Right. Well, look, we can't even collect enough money to get sheriff handbooks out. Again, we're moving to a book anyway because we really have to give the whole picture. The sheriff needs the whole picture, too. And look, it is a thick book, but 1,000 pages really isn't that thick. It is a big book and it is kind of thick, but it's not that bad. I've got a lot of books here I'm looking at that I've been reading. Let's see. You know, we'll look at the common law. Excellence of Common Law got quite a few pages. I think Brent's book's got about 800 pages or something like that. Let's see. Well, actually, he doesn't. He's got about a little over 600. So, but some of these books, okay, I may take some things out of it in the back. I don't know. That may reduce it. But because I did want to include, for instance, the founding documents, I wanted to include certain other documents, some speeches, certain court cases, but not a whole court case, not the whole thing, but at least pieces of court cases. Memorandums, the Magna Carta, and a translation of the Magna Carta to modern day English, all of those things together. But here's the bottom line: liberty is work. If you want it, you got to work for it. We should have been taught this in school. It should have been part of our education. It wasn't. It was part of the plan to remove that from the schools, to not have that in our schools, because you don't want the slave to understand that they're a slave and find a way to freedom. And that's the problem. But those of us who've gone through school and haven't got the proper education, well, we got to buckle down and get that proper education. And if you don't want to do that, then it's very clear you may not have liberty. You cannot have it. It's not for you to have. And now, if enough people step up and take care of this business, and you ride the coattails of that, well, I guess that'll be that. But you'll still never be able to be as free as you should be able to be, because you're not going to be able to defend yourself. But we need to teach and train our children so that they live in a world where collectively it's common knowledge, that common law is common knowledge, the procedures of the court is common knowledge, how our court system works is common knowledge, how we can have government by consent is common knowledge. It's just old hat. We know how to do it. But that's an education. So if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. If they don't want to spend the time to and again, I have put into this book everything I think we need to know. I'm sure there's more you could know, and there's plenty more you can learn on our website. I mean, under our educational tabs alone, you can get into essays and lectures that we have up on our website. You know, so we've got lots of things. We've got trial by jury up there. We got the Federalist Papers. I mean, that's a more extended, a more deeper education beyond what people need to know. But in my thinking, and I believe in my heart, that I have pulled together the things that every American should know. You know, people should know about Thomas Jefferson and his battle against slavery. People should know that our founding fathers built this nation with the idea to get rid of slavery. They were all born into it. You know, Washington was inherited slaves. Jefferson inherited slaves. You know, a lot of these people inherited slaves. It was the way that was under British rule. It wasn't America then. They didn't create that system. But people don't know that because historians are just ignoring that part of history. But our founding fathers created a system for slavery to be gone, to get rid of it. And Jefferson started early. He started in, I think it was 1774. I think it might have been, or 70, early, mid-70s maybe, 1773, 4, where he was chosen to be a legislator in Virginia. And his first order of business that he attended to was trying to change the law so that he could free slaves, and because it was unlawful, it was illegal in Virginia to free slaves. And he couldn't get that through. He went a second time, did the same thing, still couldn't get it through. Became governor, tried to induce and push that forward, still couldn't get that through. Was chosen to write the Declaration of Independence. He put it in there. And when we became a nation and negotiated the 13 colonies coming together, there was a few states that refused to come into the Union if they made slavery illegal. They compromised. And that's where the three-fifths of a person comes from. And if you go and read in Lincoln, Lincoln speaks about this, that this country was formed for all men to be free. All men are equal, created in the image of God. And that slavery was not to be part of this. But it was a battle in the colonies because that was part of their culture that they were born into, and they wanted to remove it. They all came to realize it. You know, Benjamin Franklin was a little bit behind. He thought that the black people were incapable of being taught anything. He was shown something different, and after he was shown that, I think, I forget where it was in the details of the story. Maybe I'll look it up one day, and maybe we'll look at that. But generally speaking, someone enlightened him and brought him to a place where there was a school, black school, all black children. And he was very impressed, and he realized how ignorant he was, that he didn't understand, and he got rid of his slaves. He freed his slaves. Now he lived in Pennsylvania, so he was able to free the slaves. I guess in Pennsylvania they didn't have a law or anything like that, and I don't think there was many slaves in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure, but anyway. You know, people need to be open to what the truth is. And that's just one thing, slavery, you know, the slavery issue, the lies that we've been taught and told. So people are too lazy to read and educate themselves. Maybe we don't deserve liberty because liberty is a relationship ultimately with nature's God, because that's what it is. And so... You know, either we need to do something or not. And as far as the sheriff, we buy a sheriff a book and the sheriff doesn't read it. Look, first of all, we have sheriffs that are working also with us. They're working on their own plan, their own program, but they're working with us and we're working with them. We want to connect the people on the local level with their sheriffs. But we have a sheriff that's going to write a letter, and I presume maybe it'll be a group of sheriffs too. Maybe a number of sheriffs might sign it. I don't know. We haven't got into those details. But we do have a sheriff that's going to write a letter on behalf of the book for education to become a constitutionally minded sheriff. So when we send these books out to these sheriffs, it's going to go out with a letter. And it'll be sheriff to sheriff. And I'm sure, you know, the Sheriff Dar will maybe invite them to the group because he's trying to bring the sheriffs across the nation together, ultimately. He's starting in his own state, his own county, and counties next door, and working through the state and working into other states. And there's already a movement to connect with sheriffs' organizations throughout the nation. So he's going to be working with that, tying them into that. But they need that proper education. So maybe that will be enough to change the individual's mind. Remember, we've all been living in the land of Oz. We've all been living in fiction. For all our lives, we've been living in fiction. And those of us who have woken up at some point in time, but we're living in fiction, and the sheriffs have been living in fiction. And they believe the lawyers. They believe the courts. They believe what they're being taught because they're living in the land of Oz. And so, you know, hopefully we'll wake them up with a note and a book. And the people within the county will hopefully wake them up. And that's the people. That's you. We have to get involved. You have to get involved in your county, you know. So anyway, next question, I guess.
Okay. Committeeman question. I went to the voter registration office in Jackson County, North Carolina. I talked to three people there, and none knew what I was talking about. You're right, they were unhelpful. What is the next move for me?
Well, look, we'll get more involved in that after the election, maybe. But, you know, we could teach people everything they need to know about the committeemen. Matter of fact, there's a chapter in the book on committeemen. Everything you want to ever want to know about committeemen and were afraid to ask or didn't know who to ask, you'll find it in the book. And so that book is a roadmap. It's a plan to liberty. It's a plan to freedom, a plan to justice, a plan to common law. You know, a plan to find our heritage. Okay, it's a plan to save the republic ultimately. So, but we have all the same stuff. We have everything you need to know about the committeemen up on our website. You go to People's Duty, highlight People's Duty on our bar on NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and you can come down. We have Become a Committeeman. Read that. Committeeman members in your county, we're working on trying to connect people with other people. We have the committeeman petition process. We have the committeeman proposed party rules. Once you get through all of that stuff and you start to organize and bring that stuff together and educate each other, okay, we need to come together in a general way as a plan to help people to get elected and not get lost by what other people will tell you, because I'm going to tell you that other people are going to tell you something different, and you're going to put the wrong thing in the wrong place or say the wrong thing, and you're going to find yourself not being an elected committeeman. There's only one way to become an elected committeeman, and none of those people out there are teaching it. They don't even know it. They don't know how to do it. It took us a while to figure this out and dig it up, okay? Thankfully, we were taught by a guy, Lenny Roberto, who really had done a lot of homework in this and put it together. But we went far deeper than him. What we exposed and found and exposed, he didn't realize himself either. So we worked off of his shoulders, so to speak. He taught us, and then we went further. And there's only one way to become an elected committeeman. There is no other way. And we teach it, and nobody else is doing it. If you go to the Board of Election and try to get some information, even if you try to do your own petition, they're going to tell you, oh, we'll get you connected with the county chairman and he'll help you. Well, yeah, he's going to help you become controlled by him and the other people that are controlling him. So you got to learn the right way and do it the right way. We need to teach this in school. Children need to know how to do this. You know, we elect people to offices, and we don't even know what those people's, what their duties are, what their jurisdictions are, what their job really is. What is it they do? And maybe even who they might appoint. You know, we need to lay out all of these elected positions, from the dog catcher to the president, and we need to be able to define their job and maybe, you know, who the people that they appoint to certain positions, so that we know. When someone does something wrong, or is doing something wrong, and they were appointed. Well, who appointed them? Because that's the person we got to find, the elected person who appointed them to a position. And that's the person we got to go after. But we don't know these things. You know, we go to the elections, and if we're Republicans, we take the R. We go all the way down with the R. Occasionally, you know, you make a choice on presidents. Usually, you make a different choice here or there, or on a governor or something like that. But generally speaking, most of these offices, you just vote R down the line or D down the line if you're a Democrat, and that's that, and you don't know any better. And that's why we're in trouble, because we are so ignorant. I speak to myself first. We are so ignorant. All right. Anything else?
Yes. This one's a little longer. The United States Constitution, Amendment 6, reads in part, "And to have the assistance of counsel for his defense." Nowhere does it claim counsel must be licensed or approved by the court or any bar association, especially since the amendment was adopted December 15, 1791, and the American Bar Association was established August 21st of 1878. Clearly, the right to the assistance of counsel could not have included licensed lawyers because none existed at the time. Today, members of the bar claim to be licensed to practice law and that no one else may serve as counsel. Two things that are similar are not the same. A license and a bar certificate may be similar, but they are not the same. Clearly, this is fraud on the public, and attorneys today are themselves practicing law without a license. The documented evidence cannot be disputed. They have unlawfully monopolized our American justice system and infiltrated and corrupted other branches of government. We the people are the masters of government, not its servants. It is time we started acting as such. So my question is, when was the United States Constitution amended to require licensed counsel instead of just counsel? Is this well-documented fraud or not?
Well,
I think it's time to bind them down by the chains of the Constitution.
Well, that's what we need to do, and we need to do that. Again, we need to become educated to do these things. It all started way back when, trying to look for the date right now. I don't have some notes on this, but it was in the early 1800s. That's what I can tell you, about 1818, somewhere around there, which we had the 13th Amendment. The original 13th Amendment came out in 1818. Or thereabouts. So it wasn't too long after our nation was created. And the problem was, there was a problem with people because we're working on who's a citizen, who isn't a citizen. You know, where is your allegiance? You know, is it with Britain or is it with the new United States now? And so we had a lot of subverters coming in. We have, for instance, the Treaty of Verona. We read about this last week, but let me read this paragraph here. The British monarch and Pope secretly agreed to undermine the American system of government via the Treaty of Verona. The British monarch breaches the Treaty of Ghent, and both the Pope and the King secretly breach their trust as international trustees. They set out on a covert action and issued letters of marque and reprisals to members of the bar associations, allowing them to act as foreign agents on American soil and as privateers free to plunder American commerce. And it didn't stop there. That was the beginning. They were infiltrating our legislature. They were infiltrating our courts. They were coming in as the attorneys. It was the British bar operating here in the United States, and that's why they came up with the 13th Amendment, where anybody with the title of nobility, or what's the other word for that? Let me see if I can open that up. Let me go read that directly. I thought I had it here. The 13th Amendment. Hopefully, I got it in this book here. I just read that earlier, Gerard. Do you know where that was? You and I were talking about this. T- 10. Oh, here it is. The original 13th Amendment. Okay? And here's what the original 13th Amendment says. Listen very carefully. If any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor, and the key is honor, from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office or of trust or profit under them. Okay, so the key here is nobility or honor. Now, I've been focused in on the word nobility, but I heard Brent teaching this recently, maybe a couple of weeks ago, talking about nobility, and I followed up on what he was talking about, and he was right. In order to have a title of nobility, it's something you're born into, okay? So your children then are born as into nobility also, and their children, and so on and so forth. And that is not the case, although that is the case of some of the problems. We probably had people that had titles of nobility that did infiltrate into our government and were causing problems and havoc and so on. But the key for us, okay, is really the other word here, which is nobility or honor. A position of honor is someone who is ordained to be a gentleman, okay, or a knight, they're knighted, or they are an esquire. So it's and the ranking system is gentleman, esquire, knight. Okay, those are three positions of honor, and that is something that is not a it's not a title of nobility. It's a title of honor, and that all bar attorneys coming in from England, Britain, were esquires. They had titles of honor. And that is what the 13th Amendment was about, to try to get rid of the bar attorneys that were bringing in ultimately Roman law or Babylonian law or Justinian law, all the same thing. It doesn't matter. All three are the same. Civil law here in the United States, same thing, nothing different, nothing new, okay? Now, a lot of these lawyers, they don't understand this. They some of them use esquire, some of them doesn't. I know the bar attorneys do. There is a certain number of schools, I forget the number of schools, I may have a note on that too here somewhere, if I can find it. Yeah, the ABA schools. Let's see it here. I think there was 30 schools in the United States that you could find that they're not bar schools, but they teach law. And there's a couple of hundred schools, maybe 200 or 300 schools that are bar approved. You know, they teach the bar curriculum. And in some states, in some occasions, they'll allow the people who were in non-bar schools to take the bar exam, and they might allow them to become a lawyer. And they certainly are not going to want those people judges. I'm sure they find their ways through the system, maybe, I think. Some of these lawyers and some of these people who may become a judge or something. But nevertheless, they all have to take the bar exam. And in the bar exam, I don't know what it entails, so I can't really comment too much on it. But to go through a bar school, these people are indoctrinated in the fact that common law is precedence. And American common law is court precedence. So you look back and you see what takes place in the court and the decisions, and that's precedence, and that's what you carry along. They call that common law. And that's what they're taught. They don't know what natural law is. They don't know what the common law is. And just take the judge that we had on the IRS case, for anybody who came in on that case to listen in on the phones. And the same judge, we had the same judge on the other case with the YouTube and Google and the others. But that judge, the statement she made is she doesn't understand the paperwork, okay? And there's too many papers, too much for her to read. Well, I'm sorry. First of all, she shouldn't be judging the cases, Her only decision-making was to decide whether the federal courts had the jurisdiction to hear in there or can go back into the state court. That was her only decision to be made. then it would, and if she decided, well, hey, look, at this case does belong in the federal courts, we have the jurisdiction over this according to the Constitution, so therefore it should be heard in the federal court, well, fine, but it's got to go to a court of law where the judge is the people and not an appointed individual, you see. But she took all the roles and wanted to play all the roles. Now, I don't know if she's that dumb that she couldn't understand. Maybe she's too intellectual. Maybe she has been trained so well in her schooling that she's incapable of understanding plain language. I don't know what it is. Because, you know, people read through these papers and, you know, there may be some strange words or things here or there that they may not understand, but we put footnotes in there, so if they look at the footnotes, you'll understand it. Not a big deal, you know. But basically, it's plain language. It's plain and you read through it, it's plain and simple language. What it does is it injures them. They don't want to face it because it convicts them and shows them that they are guilty. That's why they don't want to hear it. That's why they don't understand it, because they don't want to understand it. And it's too much. I can't read all that stuff. They think maybe, I don't know what they think. Maybe they think that's going to get them a pass or something. I don't know. But anyway, the bottom line is that anybody who is schooled in the bar as far and believing that common law has been abrogated is not qualified to be a judge, and they're not even qualified to be a lawyer. And that was the point on the Founding Fathers. It's not the fact that they've been, you know, selected and made a particular individual of honor. That's not the point. The point is what they've been trained to believe, the education that they got, and the destruction of that education to our Constitution and natural law. That's the problem. And that's who these people represent. And that's what it is. But yeah, when you go back into the Constitution, nobody's promised a lawyer. You are promised that you have the right of the assistance of counsel. And so there's a big difference with that. Okay, Jim.
Yeah, I have one more question, and then I do have a couple of announcements too.
Right.
Question: in March of 2020, the notice of removal, which now has a county case number, and removal for cause was sent out. I have not received from the grand jury the decision and orders yet. Mm-hmm. September 2nd, 2020, the county attorney wrote a memorandum for the puppet treasurer, filed in county court, a case in rem. Our names are not in the case, and they put it in the newspaper for 3 weeks, so I have until November 11th, 2020, to pay, or they will take my house from under my feet. So it's the same judge and same treasurer. Where is the decision in order, and is the grand jury going to rule on these cases, or do I keep being a slave to this system of injustice? Second, if you really want to educate the sheriffs and or U.S. Marshals, then we need to sue them if they fail to defend the Constitution and or the courtroom from injustice. They need to be told to get educated or go to jail or removed from office with a felony conviction. I really hope we expose the original 13th Amendment, as these bar county attorneys are telling people what to do. Bar judges and politicians need to go. Fourth, off the record, if the grand jury wants money, my wife and I did a three-phase notice of liability on 12 of these elected tyrants. Since January 2019, that's 2 times 25,000 equals 50,000 per person per day, with two $10 million attorneys attempting to change this contract. Just need the grand jury to do a true bill and indictments. Thanks.
All right. Well, there's a lot of issues in there, but look at the two main points here. Point number one, we need educated people. We need people educating themselves and doing what has to be done, which is their duty, okay? And then we could do something. But as long as people believe that the fiction is reality, guess what? The fiction is reality, and it'll remain so until you can come above it and realize it's fiction and shake it away. And it requires enough people to do that. In the case of what we're doing, it requires about 30 to 50,000 people, 30,000 on the low end, and I would hope to get a lot more than that. I mean, this is just the beginning. These are just the people who are really the pushers, the movers, and the shakers. These are the people that participate. Remember, I think it was Franklin who said, you know, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority that participates. So, you know, I don't know what the population of the United States is at this point. It may be about 300 million, maybe even more. But in any event, we don't need 300 million people. We need 30,000 people. And that's just to get started. And once those 30,000 people are energized within their counties, that will grow and you'll get all the people. But again, we got to get into the schools. We got to educate our children. We have to get into the colleges and educate our children in the colleges too. You know, and we have to educate ourselves. You know, we have to bone up on the law. We have to become mature to realize and disciplined to understand and realize we need to do our business. And our business right now is to learn. So that's what we have to do. So that's a problem that's causing a lot of problems for everything we're doing. You want to get rid of the fiction, the people have to know the truth. Okay? And to know the truth, you have to study. And that's it. There's no other way to get around it. Now, we have been putting out decisions and orders. We put quite a few of them out. We've indicted quite a few judges. We got a lot of indictments that we have to put together. I was talking with Jim about that last week, I think it was. And I think he said he's got a lot ready to go. I don't know that he's got the papers drawn up, but I'll talk with him and see. They're pretty much all the same, I think. You know, a little change here, a little change there. And these are the judges that are just ignoring the paperwork, that are removing it from their file, and then they're removing it. They're ignoring it. Okay, they're ignoring the fact that people are losing their homes without due process, and they are participating in it. They are ignoring the fact that they are supposed to be there to save that person's house, to save them from being, from the house being taken without due process. But they're not doing that, so they're guilty. They deserve an indictment. They deserve going to jail. And so we've got quite a few judges we still have to put onto the list. And I know we've got a bunch of decisions and orders. I'm not sure where we're at with that. Again, I'm overloaded. I am totally, totally overloaded. And there's not that many people working on paperwork. We only got a couple of people working on paperwork, but everything has to funnel through me. We had a couple of people that were going to work with us, but I don't know where they're at. So we're looking for more people that have some knowledge of these. We're looking for people who have a little bit of legalese knowledge. Not legalese, but legal knowledge. Anybody that wants to help with paperwork, we can get it done quicker. But I'm going to hope to be able to go through the paperwork with Jim this week. You know, I got like five papers I need to write this week. I'm going to try to go through it with Jim and see if we can't get those rest of those decisions and orders out, and also push all those indictments out and get them listed and posted up on not only on the website, but also up in our case up in the Northern District of New York, where we're filing papers. We'll see where we go. But we're doing the best we can. And there is something new coming up. I spoke about it a little earlier. It's a new procedure. We're going to, another step. We might even be able to cut some of the other steps out, but another step that might help us to get through the system, but we'll see. Maybe I could talk about it next week. We'll see what happens. But those are the two main things. There's a lot in that question. I mean, it's quite long, but the two things is we need more people that are educated, and, you know, We can't take all these people to court. We can't go through all these things if there's only a couple of people doing it. We need lots of people doing this. And people need to be just trained to do it, that's all. But they have to be willing to put the time in and the training and realize they're not getting paid for it, but their payment is liberty. Their payment is freedom and liberty for their children and their children's children, for your posterity, for your neighbors and friends. That's the payment. But if people aren't willing to go out and pay the price, then you can't have liberty. Next question.
That's the end of the questions. I do have two short announcements. The first one is there is a rally for your Second Amendment rights taking place this Saturday. That's October 24th, 2020. The Second Amendment rally will be broadcast live on October 24th at 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Gun owners are the gun lobby. Watch and share the video stream as our speakers celebrate and defend our right to keep and bear arms. This will be a virtual event. Register at this website for a rally and for updates. I put that in the front of the newsletter this week. I could read it to you, but you probably wouldn't get it all down. It's HTTP.
People can go back to the website, so, and take a look and get it. I mean, not to the website, email and take a look and get that information. Yeah. So,
can we bring our guns?
The second thing is, I don't know, it's a virtual one. Bring your virtual gun or a real one. Nobody cares, right? The second announcement is the Welcome Committee, again, needs some more volunteers to help with calls. The new and old members, you can call Gary. To volunteer, his number is 847-903-4561. That's 847-903-4561 if you want to volunteer to help out. Well, we do need help there.
All right.
And that's all the announcements.
If anybody didn't get that, and whatever, you know, you can get a hold of Jen, or you can come to the meetings and participate and get involved in a committee. There's a meeting at 7:30 every Monday. So anybody that wants to get into a committee, you know, you can go to that meeting and let Francine know, and she'll help you find the right people to group together with. Or if you want to create a new committee, we'll run that through the leadership and see if it works with what we're doing. And if it does, then we'll form another committee. But we got quite a few committees going, and they're all on demand. We need volunteers. We need help. We need people who want liberty. If anybody who wants liberty, they should get involved. Get a hold of Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. Send them an email and tell them what you want to do, and they'll try to direct you to the right people. Or go to the 7:30 meeting, which is right here in this room. Same phone number, same access. Everything's the same. Just come into the meeting at 7:30. Let Francine know who you are and what you're doing there, that you wanted to become part of some committee. Anybody who has special skills, secretarial skills, maybe paralegal skills, even a lawyer, you know, there's some lawyers out there that are disgusted with what's going on. I happen to know one. I got to make contact with this one guy. I connected with him about a year or so ago, and he's not happy. He's not even really doing much lawyer work. He's trying to really work into the common law thing. Maybe we can get him to work with us. We need help. And again, Trump is not going to save your nation. Only we, the people, only you can save this republic. Trump can only set the stage, put things right, and prepare it, and give it to the people. But if the people don't take it, it's over. Okay, any other announcements? That's it, right? I think he said that was it. Okay, what we're going to do is we'll move over to Brent. I saw Brent in here, if we can find him. He didn't come in as a host, I don't think, so maybe someone can unmute Brent. Gerard, are you ready to take the controls? Okay. Oh, I see him. He's in the queue already. You've been unmuted. Are you there, Brent?
Yes.
Okay.
Brent gets going, I just want to make a breaking news announcement. You might already know it. I don't know. But I just saw what Nikki sent out, which was Senator Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham are going to subpoena Facebook and Twitter CEOs because they won't let them run the New York Post story on Biden and the money that he got from China. So this thing is really heating up now. You got to pay attention.
There's a code that they're violating, and that code requires a jail sentence for anybody who interferes with an election.
And that's what they're saying. We're 11 days out, and they won't let this pertinent breaking news break. It doesn't.
We're very
familiar. It's true or it's not true, but they won't even let it out.
Yeah, we're very familiar with that. We learned that when we were studying the committee man, and we were learning a little law back then. And there's a code out there. Anybody who interferes with someone running for office, that's a crime, and it's punishable by a jail sentence. I don't remember what the jail sentence is, but it's punishable by jail. So let me introduce Brent. Alan Winters, he's an author. One of the books that he's written, Excellence of the Common Law, his website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent's going to teach us something tonight. And Gerard, you got the controls, right?
Okay, yeah.
Thank you, John. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own, and no one else takes responsibility for them but me. Well, one of the subjects that seems to excite animosity in America is lawyers. Understandably so. Some of them are some pretty low-down scoundrels. Well, they're like preachers. Every once in a while you'll find one that teaches the Bible, but not that often. And even if you find one that claims he does, he doesn't know sic'em from come here about it. Well, lawyers are like that. There's some of them that are right-headed, and many of them that are not. All of them, to varying degrees, like all other men, are self-seeking, which is part of the human dilemma and curse. But there are those that are right-headed in the sense that they want what's right. Many of them don't have a clue what right is. We have been judges on the benches now, and have had for a long time, but it's getting worse, that have never practiced law. Never practiced law. Oh, maybe for 2 or 3 years they wanted to make sure it looked like they did, so they got their name on the rolls of a law firm. But 2 or 3 years isn't very long. I mean, you go to law school for longer than that. Well, at least 3 years, sometimes longer. But our courts are filled, our benches are filled with lawyers that have never practiced law. The career path today to the United States Supreme Court is clear to me, and I seldom hear it said. I'll say it here. It's a well-established path in our own day. Didn't used to be this way, but this is the path today. Let me tell you what it is. I've watched it now for about 3 decades. And here's the way it works. You go to college and make straight A's. That means you are willing to spit back at the professor whatever he teaches you. It doesn't mean that you've got a mind of your own. That's what I'm trying to say. But you get good at it. Just like a thespian or a stage actor. You'll memorize the lines and get real good at it and say anything they want you to say. No matter how wrong, ugly, vicious, politically wrong, detrimental to other people in the community, obscene, and then call yourself a professional because you have the ability to act like somebody else that you aren't and do it for pay. What that is, just a cheap whore. That's what that boils down to. Well, that's what people often that make straight A's, that's what they are. I don't say this lightly. I've been around the academic scene for a lot of years, and I've watched it. They're like expert witnesses. They are paid, and they spit it back. Well, at any rate, they make straight A's at college. This is the career path to federal judgeship at any level. whether it be a federal judge or a federal appellate judge or a U.S. Supreme Court judge or maybe an appellate judge at the state level too, but this is the career pattern. Straight A's in college, apply for law school, go to an Ivy League law school. Everything from Harvard to Cornell to the University at Stanford or UCLA maybe, University of Minnesota, Yale, Notre Dame. Notre Dame would probably qualify, but you go to one of those schools. And then you make straight A's there. You're at the in the top 10% of your class, and you are invited to write on the law review. That's a big deal. You're on your way at that point, see? And then you graduate from law school. This is the established career path. No, I'm not making this up, and everybody that's in law school understands this. Well, then after law review and you're at the top 10% of your class at your law school, then after that, you procure, after graduation, procure a position as a clerk with a federal judge. Could be a federal trial judge, federal appellate judge, or U.S. Supreme Court justice. And to be a clerk with a U.S. Supreme Court justice, you must be religiously compatible with that justice. And there are two options you have, for instance, if you're on the United States Supreme Court. I'm speaking the facts here, just the facts. Well, I'm not making this up. I'm just stating the facts. I'm not delivering an opinion. There are two options you have if you're going to clerk for a Supreme Court justice. And you must be religiously compatible with the person for whom you clerk. You're either a Romanist or a Talmudist, because that's all that's on the U.S. Supreme Court. A Romanist or a Talmudist. Now, the nominee we recently had clerked for Justice Antonin Scalia. Well, then after that, after you clerk for a federal judge, the next step is to go to work as a partner for a large law firm where you make $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year for anywhere, but you'll be there for anywhere from 2 to 5 years generally. As I said before, that doesn't mean you practice law. That means you are a partner. Why are you a partner? Because you clerk for a federal judge and you know the ropes and you have the inside story, and also you're accepted in the federal courts because you were a clerk there. So you work for this large, massive law firm, and massive law firms control the practice of law in America. Massive law firms send a lot of money to law schools. And because they send a lot of money to law schools, they dictate what the curriculum will be at the law school. You say, how do you know, Brent? Well, I've been there. I've watched. I've watched for years, and I was there and watched it. I know who the donors were, and I saw the criteria that the donors would send to the law school and say, this is what we want. These are the lawyers we want. They must be trained to do this. To do what? To work for a big law firm. If you work for a big law firm, I mean a really big law firm, you're part of the system. Nobody there is going to buck the status quo. No, not at all. The money is too big. You got big corporations coming to you that make a lot of money. Is that important? Oh, it's important, and that's part of that culture. If they didn't try to be exclusive about it and control everything, it wouldn't be so bad, but that's inevitable. They're going to do that. If they have a lot of money, they're going to seek to control everything. And you would too, by the way. And if you say otherwise, I don't believe you. Once a fellow has a lot of money, he eventually will want to control as much as he possibly can. That'd be all right if he was right-headed, but most of them that have spent their time making a lot of money haven't thought about what right and wrong is that much and how to discern the difference. That's been my observation. So they control a lot. Now, there are those lawyers, of course, that just go hang out a shingle and try to make it on their own. Defend people that nobody else will defend because the big law firms don't want to defend people that are socially unacceptable. trouble is, the people that are socially unacceptable, God made them too. And he made them in out of his imagination. That means in his image, he imagined them, what they would be, and then he made them. That's what that means. Just like he did the folk that are rich, the big law firm people. I don't think it's right to make an enemy out of the big law firm people, as I said a while ago. Anybody who has a lot of money and falls into that position, their ugliness is going to come out too. That means me and you. But it doesn't mean it's right, and it should be resisted if you see it. Well, that's the career path. That's the career path to be a federal judge after you're in a law firm. Oh, one other thing I forgot. The last step in that progression is to be a professor at a law school, a prestigious law school, after you spend two or three token years, or four or five maybe, at a large law firm earning hundreds of thousands of dollars a year simply because you were a clerk for a federal judge, or sometimes a state appellate judge. Well, I was never in that club for a lot of reasons. I did clerk for a state appellate judge, which was enough to show me that the system is what it is, and the progression is what it is. And people even said to me, how did you get so you were in that position to clerk for an appellate judge? And it was a quirk of circumstances, because I was from a little tiny county, only had a handful of lawyers, half a dozen probably, I don't know, wasn't that many. And one of them was the one that was in our town, and he was the only one in town. And so everybody knew him, everybody liked him, and if they didn't like him, they'd have ran him out. They didn't, because he helped everybody. And he put me in that position because he knew the appellate judge. I asked him if I could help him. He said, no, but I got somebody you can help. That's how that happened. It didn't last long, but I was there long enough to learn how it worked a little bit. I didn't come from a family of lawyers. I came from a family of farmers, and we raised hogs and cattle, and so did my granddad, and so did my great-granddad, and so did my great-great-granddad. So that was a new thing. Matter of fact, just stating the facts again, I was the first, my brother and I were the first people in our family to graduate from high school. It was all foreign to me, but I wanted to try it. Well, that brings me around to the practice of law in America. And I listened a while ago, and I like to listen to what's said, because then it gives me ideas about what I want to mention. But the practice of law in America, when our country started, there were about 100 graduates of the English Inns of Court that lived in the American colonies, about 100. These were the common lawyers trained and licensed to practice law in the American colonies. You couldn't go to the universities and learn how to be a lawyer, because the universities, Rome controlled them, and they didn't allow common law in Oxford and Cambridge in England, for instance. Those were the only two universities in Britain at that time. Well, the universities up there at Glasgow in Scotland and the one at Edinburgh, they were getting a start at that time, I should say. Yeah, but in England, and the people in England didn't like them either. People complained about us being racist. In Britain, the English hated the Scots worse than any white man in America ever did hate a black man, and vice versa, I might add. You got to find somebody to hate, even if they're the same color. If you don't have anybody any other color, you'll hate people of the same color who might be a little different than you. Again, coming back to the depravity of the human soul. Doesn't mean it's right, but it is the way it is. As they say, it is what it is. Well, about 100 of these common lawyers lived in America, and by the way, all of them had license. Here's what I wanted to get to. The question was, while ago, if we have a right to counsel, it doesn't say, the Constitution doesn't say that that means you got to have a license to be counsel. Well, the Constitution of the United States explains absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's not intended to explain anything. It didn't have to explain anything, pretty much, because all of its words and phrases are couched. The framers, the ones that drafted it, couched all of its words and phrases into the common law itself. Why? Because they lived in an atmosphere of common law. That's all they knew. Somebody said I'm clicking, or I'm not typing. I'm probably thumping my computer with my fingers as I talk. Somebody said, okay, well then stop it, stupid. Okay, I'll stop. Well, at any rate, I was talking about the common lawyers in America, and they were licensed to practice law, and they were part of the court system. Common lawyers always have been a part of the court system. They were not part of the legislative branch of the government or the executive branch. No, they're officers of that other branch called the courts. And yes, they've always had license, and I started to say that the right to counsel, because our Constitution doesn't explain that or unpack it in any way, the right to counsel means the right to counsel that's competent. All of the words and phrases of our Constitution are couched in the common law. That's the way the drafters did it, because they lived and breathed the air and the atmosphere of the common law, as Chief Justice Taft of the U.S. Supreme Court once put it. And in order to understand the Constitution of the United States, every word, every phrase, every concept is informed by the common law. And if the common law does not inform it for those that try to interpret it, then it becomes empty and meaningless. For instance, the right to counsel. No, it doesn't say licensed counsel. It doesn't say that. But our common law informs it. And at that time, and for centuries before that, in order to practice before the courts, the common law courts in England and then in the colonies, one had to have permission. That's called license from the court. The court's a separate and co-equal branch of government in a common law country. It's not above the other branches, but it is separate, co-equal. That means it governs itself entirely. That means that the legislative branch or the executive branch doesn't dictate to the courts what constitutes permission to practice law before the courts. When I say practice law, that means to represent and speak for another person. Oh, you can represent and speak for yourself. That's a fundamental right. But it is not a fundamental right that you can represent and speak for somebody else unless the court gives you permission. The court is master of what goes on in the courts, just like the legislative branch, Congress, is master of what goes on in Congress. The House of Representatives controls everything. The courts have no say whatsoever as to what goes on in the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives can discipline its own members, throw a man or woman out, accept them in, and seat them. They govern themselves. They're separate and equal, co-equal branch of government. Same thing is true with the courts. No other branch of government tells the courts how to run their business. They run it entirely the way they want to. That's why case precedent is so important in our common law country. We follow the rulings of other cases. Why? Because we don't follow the rulings of the legislature or the president of the United States when you're in federal court. No, the courts follow their own rulings. Why? Because they're a separate and co-equal branch of government. They do their own thing. They govern themselves. They come to their own conclusions. They are utterly independent, just as the president, the executive branch, is utterly independent of the other two branches, in the same way with Congress. And then Congress is divided into two other branches, two branches of the legislative branch. And each branch, the House of Representatives and the Senate, each one of those is separate and governs itself entirely without any interference from the other branch of the government or the other branch of the legislature. And the same is true in all of our states, with two exceptions, Nebraska and Louisiana. And there are minor exceptions. I could talk about that. But in general, we're a common law government, federal and state. And the courts have the absolute authority to decide who and who does not practice law before the courts. I was in a court in another state where I wasn't licensed to practice, and I had a client that was drug into that federal court on charges of failure to pay a tax, a federal tax, an income tax. I went to that state. He had a hearing coming. I went to that state. I traveled around the town where the federal court was looking for a lawyer that would sponsor me. You've got to have somebody sponsor you if you're not licensed to practice before that court, and I wasn't. But I wanted to help him. I tried to find a lawyer that would sign for me to get in. Couldn't find one. Didn't know anybody up there. So I did the next best thing, and I went into the court and sat in the gallery. I wasn't allowed to come up and sat with my client, because even though I was a lawyer licensed in another state, I wasn't any different than anybody else in that state and then in that federal court. Well, my client was up speaking for himself, and the U.S. attorney introduced me and said, "Judge, this is the client's lawyer." And the judge said, "You stand up. Where are you?" He said, "You come up here and sit down with your client." Well, he gave me permission to practice law in his court, and he did it as a field commission, so to speak, right on the spot. I didn't sign any papers. I didn't pay any fees, which the rules of the court required. But in that case, he waived it and said, "You just come up here and sit down." Well, when the federal judge tells you to come up and sit down, you come up and sit down. But without his permission, without his license, again, that's what permission is, I couldn't practice before that court. It's always been that way. And the word counsel in the Constitution, what does that mean? Well, again, the common law informs every word and every phrase. At that time in America, to practice before a court, the court had to give you a license. And there were men that did that. And it was tough to get a license. You had to be a graduate of one of the Inns of Court. There were four of them, Inns of Court in England. By the way, the Inns of Court are private organizations. They had to be private because they wouldn't let men who wanted to be lawyers into, Rome would not let them into their universities, Oxford and Cambridge. All universities in the world are products of Rome by the commission of the Roman Pope beginning in the 11th century. The first university in the world, the University of Bologna, which is spelled Bologna, Italy, the Pope of Rome commissioned that. If I'm being heard, somebody signify. Am I back? I thought I went down there for a second.
You did, yes, go apparently down, I am. But you're back now.
I'm back. Oh, thank you. Okay. Yeah, it started looking weird. Well, that's the history, a little bit of the history of the practice of law in our common law tradition, coming from England, and counsel in our Constitution, that word, being informed by our common law, meant you had to have license to practice before the courts in the American colonies, and then they turned states independent. Sovereign states, and the same thing pertained. Remember, our revolution, our war for separation from Britain didn't change anything. We weren't trying to change things. We just wanted them to quit. We wanted them to quit trying to change things. We had the common law, and they said, no, you're going to have the law of the city, admiralty law, administrative law, bureaucratic law, martial law, all the same thing, the law of the city. That's what they were saying. We said, no, we don't want to change. We like it the way it is. We like our courts. We like our juries. We like the due process of the common law. We like the right to keep and bear arms. We like the right to remain silent. All of those came from our common law. They weren't something made up. Our Bill of Rights is just an affirmation of our common law. Our whole Constitution is. And at common law, a license was required. You could represent yourself, but you couldn't represent somebody else. And so when it says counsel, one of the things that courts have said, wrestling with that question that was raised a while ago, so glad it was raised, and give me something to talk about, one of the things that the courts have wrestled with is fundamentally, what does counsel mean? Well, they said fundamentally what it means is competence. Counsel must be competent or it's not counsel. A fellow's got to, if he's going to be counsel, he's got to have some badges of that he knows something about what he's doing. If you're going to have somebody represent you in a trial by combat, the rules, the marquee rules would say, well, if you're going to have somebody represent you in a trial by combat, then he must have some evidence that he's competent with a sword, with a spear, with a mace, with a javelin, with fighting on horseback, whatever it is. It wouldn't be right, according to the rules, that you don't have some competence. I had a buddy once. We were in Oakland, California, watching TV. Oakland, California. Actually, we're in Alameda, which is right by Oakland. And over at the Oakland Coliseum, there was some kind of a circus going on. We were on watching it on TV. And they had a bear inside of a ring, a bear. It wasn't a grizzly, but he was a big one. And they offered anybody that would get in the ring with that bear and stay more than, I believe it was 2 minutes, they give him a reward of $1,000 or $500 or something. Well, my buddy decided he was going to jump in the car and drive over to Oakland and enter the contest. We weren't that far away from the Coliseum. I always felt like he'd probably been drinking too much beer, but I don't know. But he went over there. We were watching on TV, and by my line is now off hold. I'm back. Well, he got in. I can't even remember that guy's name. Big red-headed fella, and he was from Tennessee. Well, he got in, and the bear, they had the teeth out of the bear, and his claws were clipped and all, but the bear got hold of him in a bear hug and just flung him out of the ring. And he didn't stay more than 2 seconds. Well, if he'd have been competent to match the bear, it'd been different. And it really wasn't responsible that they would let a bear do that to people. But that's what they did. Well, that's the way it is. If you're going to have counsel, the law says your counsel has to be competent. And the courts have then further ruled that one of the badges of competency, if you're going to have counsel, you have a right to it. One of the badges of competency is that one of the American jurisdictions of state or federal courts has licensed you to practice before that court. And then, of course, people can apply to get in wherever they're needed if they're licensed to practice before another court. Well, that's some of what I understand about the practice of law and permission and competent counsel. And a lot more to it than that. A lot more cases have been decided than that. But that maybe is a start and a little historic background about it as I understand it. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. www.commonlawyer.com. And I announce now, though, I want to make sure and announce this. that the winterized version of the Bible, a common lawyer translates and annotates the Bible, translating from the original tongues, Hebrew, Aramaic, and Koine Greek, that Bible is now available in digital form. And the way it's set up now, if you buy the hard copy, or buy it, if you obtain it, you can go to commonlawyer.com and see how to do that. If you obtain the hard copy, then the digital copy comes with it. And it's a savings of about $75. And you can do word searches on the digital copy. Anyway, that's commonlawyer.com, and this is Brent, and thank you so much to National Liberty Alliance. As always, they let me say a few words, and Gerard, back to you.
Okay. Let me just mute this one. I'm getting an echo. That's weird. Okay. Okay, well, let's see who's in the queue. We have Peggy Walmart. Just let us know what your state is on the show.
Greetings. This is Dan Stanlin, and I'm at an office belonging to Miss Peggy Womble and also Bruce. And I might have to go outside. Someone is down below in a movie. Sound like a movie theater. If it gets too loud, let me know and I'll go outside. But try to be quieter. Anyway, I wanted to let everyone know and be encouraged. If you are dealing with an estate, you certainly want to stand up for what is made, hopefully that's in a will, in case that someone is trying to avert the will or maybe challenge the will or whatever. You certainly have the right to speak under the First Amendment rights, of course. It's good if you can get an individual called the next friend or someone as Mr. Brent Williams, Winter, excuse me, I didn't mean to say Williams, just mentioned that would be of competence, see, and that would be able to help you and sit side of you before a clerk of court proceeding. I'll try to not be too lengthy with this. According to North Carolina, there's a chapter 47 has to do with probate and procedure. I hope you folks will, if you don't find the copy, would be send in some emails to either Jan or Gerard or hopefully maybe even Mr. John Durash. But if it came down to it, I would be happy to provide this document, which is about 50 pages altogether, front and back, both sides printed. And it clearly talks about the jurisdiction is with the clerk. As you might understand, you don't have too much choice. That is not a court of record. It's not. It operates under color of court. But nevertheless, usually, as you as a layperson would be able to participate and stand your own, pretty much, hopefully, with maybe with assistance, if nothing else, what is called a next friend. In that accord, I hope that maybe this will be encouraging to a lot of you that I have heard Mr. John Durash and all the different ones, Mr. Brent Allen Winters even, and whatever, the other ones that are very supportive and are very knowledgeable to help people stand against unlawful foreclosures. And so we need to get further educated, and the more you get around people that are of knowledge, like coming on this conference every Monday night and looking through what is being made available to you, I hope you will see how you should see readily opportunity, and I hope that for you, you and your family, from here centuries to come, even. I feel that certain about this, and with the very diverse speakers that are no doubt of very knowledgeable, as you can understand, we are very honored to have Mr. Brent Allen Winters to expound on documents you would never be able to ever hear or even come close to the truth, and that goes for Mr. John Darash and any other that he has to speak, or Gerard, for matter. Gerard is just really tremendous master of ceremonies and very knowledgeable, and these guys are also, they speak too on various, I guess it's radio syndicates or whatever. They can certainly apply, fill you in on that. So I wanted to kind of give this as encouragement. We need to do what Mr. John Darash was telling us tonight. All of us are falling short, and this is where we can catch up and become knowledgeable. And it's our duty and opportunity, too. And so this is such a convenient means, because anyone that's wanting to seek the truth, the doors are open to you. And come every Monday night and see for yourself. Go to the website, National Liberty Alliance. .org is just commendable, and what these parties are there trying to show us, and we need to unite with these individuals that care about America, but they care because they stand for the truth. They will not stand for anything else but the truth. So I could say a lot more here. We've got other people here that have some very important questions. Those that may be fearing someone unlawfully trying to steal their home from them, about all I can say to you is, besides getting the help from, when it comes down to it, if you don't get the right results, if there's fraud there, you rest assured you need to hurriedly get before this medium here and learn exactly a defense. And in regard to someone stealing your property, that's fraud. And that is clearly right there that you are not being subjected to nothing but fraud if someone is trying to steal your property, unless a 12-man jury, so judge, and you demand that in your papers for a jury trial, and not just a regular jury trial, but a common law jury trial that will be people of your, understanding and how you, you grew up and would be like-kind thinkers, but possibly, of knowing whatever your occupation is. That's all I have. I just wanted to commend this, and again, tremendous night here already with what we've heard, and we need to be due diligently seeking further to learn what Mr. John Darash is bringing forward to us about the committee men, and by all means, please, let's get, I need to send my request in and get that book ordered pronto. That will certainly help, and also contributions will be appreciated here to do a tremendous, awesome work of humanity for all mankind. That's all I have.
I couldn't get myself on muted.
That's okay. We understand.
Anyway, thank you for that, Dan.
You're just most deserving, and really tremendously welcomed. All of you guys, just the greatest. I'm in awe as to being, to be able to sit down and listen to something that is needed, and it will change the course of history, and it'll change things for our kids, and it'll take those kids out of bondage. Our children that are not even born are subject to be in bondage. I don't know if any parent would want their child to be subject to bondage, to be a slave on the plantation. I don't mean this disrespectful. I have some great black friends, and even I think this thing when we're talking about the slave plantation, we're the seeing ourselves go through history that's already happened, and we want to help our black family members and any other persons that have gone through slavery in the past. But it's slavery right now, folks. Wake up until we get these things changed. And it doesn't matter who you are. And I hope all my black friends will certainly come and support this organization, as well as for the benefit for all. And God bless our president, what he's up to, of trying to be a representative for all people of all walks of life.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're welcome. Yep.
I don't know. I'm having trouble with my screen here. Hang on just a minute. See why I can't get this going. This is horrible. I don't know. Anyway, let me try to get Barbara from New York. Go ahead. You are unmuted, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you, Gerard. What you said last week about the green dot visas was, I think, was really significant. And, I think it's a really good clue, and I wanted to ask you about the speech that Christine Lagarde gave at the IMF over the week. She seemed to be like, you know, she said that we're going to have a new system, and there's a demand for a digital dollar. Do you know what this is and what it will mean for Americans?
Well, I think there's a battle going on, and that's the problem.
Wait, I have trouble hearing you. Just a minute. Okay. Okay. Right now, I hear an echo, and it's kind of hard for me to hear you. I don't know if I did something or what.
No, it's me. I'm having a problem here with this thing.
All right, well, maybe I can answer. Maybe you can repeat the question.
Well, I have a question. I'm Christine Lagarde spoke, I guess it was over the past few days. She said she came out and made some statements about how she sees that there's a need for the digital dollar and that it's coming out. No, digital, no, it's a, called something called a CB something currency. And how it's, you know, it's in the works, and she made
who
some
said
kind of,
who told her that that kind of a thing is in the works, you know?
Well, I don't know. I mean, she
look at the
she didn't
look
say
at
that.
The president is going to be moving after the election, maybe not till next year though. He's going to be moving back to a constitutional money, which is gold and silver.
Okay.
Anything other than that is no good.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I see stories come up on YouTube about having your balances in your bank digitized, linked to a lot of your personal information. It does not sound good.
Well, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that the powers that be, the oligarchs, the New World Order, whatever you want to call them, the deep state, which really is a mechanism for them. It's a weapon, the deep state. But you know, they've got a lot of plans to do a lot of things, and you may be hearing about those plans. But plans have changed, and,
yeah,
and Trump
okay.
is going back to gold and silver. There's no doubt about it. He's already we've heard many times that he has seized the gold that has been stolen from our treasury. In fact, that was done a couple of years ago, and maybe it's still in effect. I don't know. But he's definitely moving to gold and silver. Constitution requires it, and that's what we have to do. Anybody who's got nickels, save your nickels, because the nickels are real money. You know, the nickel hasn't changed in over 100 years. Maybe I know it goes back at least to the late 1800s, probably further than that. I don't know how far the nickel goes, but at least 100 years ago. Nickel is 75% nickel, 25% copper, and the value of metal within a nickel was equal to a true 5 cents. And that has not changed. Congress voted to pull the nickel and the copper out of the nickel, I guess make it steel, a slug. Either the Senate had to agree and didn't, or maybe the president at the time, maybe he vetoed it. I wasn't aware of what took place, but I do remember it went through the Congress. They were going to remove the nickel, and that was going back to 2008, and they were going to remove the nickel and the copper out of the nickel back in 2009, but that didn't happen. So anybody, I go to the bank every once in a while and get $100 in nickels. You could buy a box of nickels, which is $100, okay? Each roll of nickel is $2. There's 50 rolls in a box of nickels, and that equals $100. Now, when everything equalizes, and it has to equalize, go back. Gold has been for 200 years. It's been $20. Of course, not since actually the past 80 years or so, 90 years. It no longer has that value. That's been going up and down, and now it's up a couple of $1,000s. But when things are said and done, it's going to be $20 of silver. 20 silver dollars will equal one ounce of gold. Okay, and $20. Whether if you have $20 in nickels, okay, well that's an ounce of gold. So a box of nickels is 5 times, it's 5 ounces of gold, 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, yeah, is 5 ounces of gold. That's why they're calling for, I don't know, if this is doing, I'm sure it's everywhere, because the Fed says, hey, they got a coin shortage. They're trying to pull the nickels off the market. That's what I think they're trying to do. My point is this, you can go out for $100 and buy 5 ounces of gold in nickels. Now, of course, it's not worth that yet. But when you get to the other side, it will be. When everything balances out, it will be so, because nickel has a value, copper has a value, gold has a value, silver has a value, and that has been the makeup of our money for 200 years, except for the past 30 or 40 years when they've removed all that stuff, going back into the 1960s, I think 65 is when they removed the silver. And copper, I think, was in 82, if I remember, and nickel's still in there.
So you don't want paper dollars, but I understand a lot of advisors are saying get the coins like the dimes and the nickels and the quarters that are before 33, I guess.
Well, yeah, but there's something else. There's another interesting thing. And again, I think this is why they're pulling back the change right now. They're trying to get as much change off of the out of the market as they can. So they say that there's a shortage. Bear in mind, the Federal Reserve dollar is exactly that. It's a Federal Reserve dollar. It has nothing to do. It's not a true dollar. Okay. It's not like it's a silver certificate that Kennedy put out, or United States $1. No, this is a Federal Reserve note, okay? And the U.S. dollar is a different thing. Now, of course, you haven't seen a U.S. dollar unless you go back to your childhood. You know, I've seen it when I was a child, maybe.
Really?
In silver certificates, anyway. Prior to the Federal Reserve, you'd have to go back further. I think I have a picture of the dollar before the Federal Reserve took over. But here's the thing. See, the Federal Reserve has been pumping out the dollars, and it's a note, okay? It's debt. It's not money. But coins are still, you know, made by the Treasury. That doesn't say Federal Reserve on it. It's got a face value of it. And so in theory, okay, even though your penny doesn't even have copper in it, and your dime doesn't have silver in it, your dime quarter and half dollar and silver dollars, you know, well, those golden dollars, they don't have any metals in it, you know, they don't have silver in it. Even though that's the case, when you get to the other side, they may be held liable because there is a code that requires face value in gold for, you know, for all of those different coinage or dollars.
Oh.
Now, not on the Federal Reserve note, though. Not on the Federal Reserve note.
No.
But you could be, but I am, as far as nickels are concerned, I'm absolutely clear on that one. I did some research on the gold and silver and the relationships, and they hadn't changed for hundreds of years. Gold and silver, you know, what George Washington and our founding fathers spent to buy a quart of milk or a loaf of bread. Of course, people, you know, make things and they bought it and sold. But the price of what that would have been way back then is no different than what it would have been in the early 1900s. Of course, inflation changed all that when the Federal Reserve came into play. So everything changed with inflation because they put out the Federal Reserve dollar, which is debt. It's not real money. It's a monopoly. It's debt. It's not backed by – well, it was backed for a while, at least they claim, but they kept reducing its value. I mean, in the 1970s, I remember, an ounce of gold – I'm trying to think – goodness, I don't even remember. I do have notes because I did some research on this, but I forgot a lot of this stuff. But here's the bottom line. No matter what you do, nickel has nickel in it, and it has a value, and the value is related up to gold and silver. And when gold and silver stabilizes and they get rid of the Federal Reserve note, and you'll still have the nickel, and the nickel will have its value of 5 real cents. So, you know, a dollar in nickels is equal to a silver dollar.
Okay. But, you know, they sell where you buy silver dollars, you can get a quarter of a dollar, or, you know, a tenth of a silver dollar. I mean, I'm not sure if people would want that because they'll look at it and say,
"Well, of course they do.
What is this?"
They have a half a silver dollar. They have a quarter. They have a dime, and we even have a nickel and a penny.
These aren't. I mean, these are like made by bullion. These are actually just one. You know, 0.999 silver, made by bullion mints. You know, like.
So it has, what you're saying is that they're putting out a dime that has a silver, the value of a true value of silver in a dime.
Yeah, as much silver.
Remember,
as you
the
have
relationship.
In.
Here's the true relationship, and you got to remember this. This is the key to the whole thing. $20, 20 silver dollars equals 1 ounce of gold. Okay, so 20 ounces of silver equals 1 ounce of gold. That's a relationship that never changes and never will. Okay, it does now because of inflation. They had to play around with the value of metals to keep the economy going, and so gold had to be raised up higher than silver had to be pushed down, and even nickel had to be pushed down. So the prices, because everything is all, you know, just screwed up and inflated. But if we go back to silver and gold as the standard, then it will become it'll equalize back out to its normal relationship. 20 silver dollars will equal 1 ounce of gold. $1 in nickels will equal 1 silver dollar. Okay? You, if you got copper pennies out there, 100 copper pennies will equal 1 silver dollar. Quarters go back to, of course, you know, you'll have go back to the silver with inside the quarter and the half a dollar and the dimes and so on.
Okay. All right.
It really is very simple. It's just a ratio and a relationship between them. But,
okay.
You know, the gold, the dollar isn't worth any more than 2 cents. You know, you go out and buy a candy bar, let's say a Three Musketeer or a Milky Way, you know. When I was a kid, we got that, what, for 5 cents, and you got the big bar for 5 cents. The big bag of potato chips was what? 49 or 59 cents for their super bag of potato chips, big. I mean, and that, and even then there was inflation, you know, because, you know, I was in the 50s and the 60s, you know, and so mm-hmm. there was inflation. So, you know, it was even cheaper than that, and you go back further, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So things will be cheaper to buy, so money will have a much more higher value. But, you know, once you get back and you don't have that inflation, when you save a dollar today, 20 years from now, that dollar will still have its same value. Today, if you save a dollar today, 20 years from now, it might be worth a penny.
Yeah, right.
So you really can't save in dollars. You have to save in metals or some other way, some other thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
Right. Rod, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
And when we go to the gold-backed money, that doesn't mean there won't be digital currency available. I mean, people are using Bitcoin right now, which is supposedly backed by gold. It just depends on how they do it.
But you don't think you'll be forced to use it, like to pay your taxes?
Well,
or anything?
They would love to get us on a completely digital currency. That's if we. If
yeah,
we
but I'm sure we'll still have a digital currency like debit cards and stuff. You use your bank and stuff. But they're supposed to have a certain amount of money to cover that. Look,
right.
Leveraging cannot be any more than 10%. I mean, I would imagine they'd allow the banks to leverage up to 10%. But banks are leveraging 1,000%.
The New World Order's dream is that you have a digital money. There is no cash to give anybody. Everything goes through a system. They know where everything is. And just like, and it probably runs off your cell phone like China did with the social credits. And if you goof up, they take credit away, and pretty soon you can't buy and you can't sell because you're a malcontent, and you're not doing what the government wants. That's what they want. Look, at China wants to come here, so that's what we need to watch out for. If we start losing the war, you're going to see China stuff start coming over here.
Okay.
So I'm hoping we don't. There's a lot of stuff coming out. You know what I mean? If all this stuff on Biden comes out, and, you know, China, a vote for Biden is a vote for China, ultimately.
Yes.
That's where we're going.
Yes.
And they're crazy, and they can taste it. They're so close to winning, and there are so many people out there that are so brainwashed, it's ridiculous. This is a real battle, so you better get your prayer closets and pray that Biden does not win. And I've had people say, I can't vote for Trump, you know. They got this third-party candidate, blanket ship or something. I said, so you're going to blow up for a blank ship? That's a vote for Biden. Because there's no way that some guy from the Constitution Party, I don't know who he is, he was also arrested for mine safety or with some mine that blew up and guys got killed, and he has some strike against him on that. I don't know what the story is, but, you know.
Is he Hunter Biden?
No, this is a guy named Blankenship, and he's running under the Constitution Party, and he's running for president, believe it or not, you know, as if he's really a third-party candidate. And the only time they put anybody in there is if they got the goods on you, and they're bought and paid for. I don't know who this guy is or what they got on him. He's never going to win, but the only reason that they let him in there is for those people like my sister that feel like Trump is not honest and that he's part of the New World Order and he's going to do a bait and switch. And so she can't pull his lever, but she won't pull Biden's lever. So she'll throw it out on this guy thinking that, well, I'm not voting for the lesser of two evils. I'm voting for some guy that's really conservative. But all it is that what they're doing is they're putting lies in there and telling people, you know, if you vote for Trump, you really vote for the New World Order. He's got his Trump card. He's going to switch to last minute, change his mask, and the horns are going to come out, and the devil's going to come out. That they're playing on people's fears, and people are stupid. And right now, basically, I'm telling you, it's a fight between good and evil. There's a clear line in
it
the
is.
Sphere. It's a no-brainer for me. That you don't vote for Biden, because if you vote for Biden, you're voting for killing babies, adrenochrome, pedophilia, and all the stuff that they did. That's what that vote's for. And I'm going to tell you, God's going to hold you responsible for that vote. So if you feel like you're going to pull Biden's lever for any reason, whether it's because you think that your union's going to do better or whatever, you're basically going to get the wrath of God on you, because these people are evil, and they're not even hiding it anymore. I mean, I can say that in public like this, I feel confident that I can back up everything I'm saying with actual real data. You know what I mean? These guys were farming kids underground and everything. Oh, that's conspiracy theory. No, bull crap. It is not. And things are that bad. And you know, I think that the reason Trump is here is because enough people prayed that God turned his eyes to the nation and he had mercy on us. He gave us a chance. Well, he gave us one chance. Now here's our second chance. And if we don't put him in this time, we're out. We're not going to get the third chance. So anyway, I'm sorry. That's my opinion. Yeah. I had to say that.
Because
they're working overtime. And even people that I thought were smart, like my sister, you know, have been fooled by this baloney. And they bring up stuff. Oh, he had more than one wife. They hold him to standards that they can't hold to, you know. And they, he did this and he did that. And look, I go by what he does. And then they're saying, he gave more money to Planned Parenthood than Obama gave. That's a lie. It's a lie from hell. And what they're doing is they're taking figures out of context. And they're saying, oh well, look, Trump gave to family planning. He definitely took the money out of abortion and birth control. And family planning has many departments, and a lot of people use the health care part of it. He didn't cut the health care, but they cannot use a dollar for abortion. And my sister said, well, how do you know that they're not using the money he gave them for? Because if they do, how do you know that you're not putting a $20 bill in your copier and copying it? Because it's a freaking felony, right? Well, the same thing when they make a law and they say you can't use any of this money for abortion. And so if you take that money and you divert it and use it for abortion, you just committed a federal offense. That's how you know. You know? You know, they're so evil that they think that laws don't mean anything. So I understand why they don't believe that money can't be used for that, because they belong to that party that believes that the law doesn't mean anything. It means what they say. It means when they need it to mean that. And basically that's what it is. And there's more lies out there than you can believe. And so they attack Christ the same way. You know, when Christ exercised the devil out of God, you use the devil to throw the devil out. It's the power of the devil, you know. And what did Christ say? He said, well, who do you throw him out with? He said, if that's true, a house divided can't stand. It's the same thing with Trump. He's done so much damage to the things that were status quo, to the child trafficking that was coming across our borders, and he shut that down. He shut down all the drug stuff, and he shut down. They're suffering because they have no more money coming in. You understand? Because all these illegal things Trump has shut down for 3 years, and he attacked it from the bottom. Everybody's going, when's he going to arrest Hillary? When's he going to arrest Obama? You don't go to those. You don't attack the devil at the top of the pier, because everybody then they're on alert. He went just like you're supposed to, and flanked them, and took their legs out, and attacked their income, and the money, and the child trafficking, and the opium, and all that stuff that they were making money on. He took that out first, and now he's ready to take them out. And they're up in a corner, and they're very, very dangerous. We're in a very dangerous time in America right now.
Oh my God!
And so we need to all watch out and look. Get guns and ammo, because that's the only thing that's saving us right now, is that Second Amendment. They know they can't march into the average American town and just take over with the force of force using guns against us, because they're going to get led back. And that's the only thing that's holding them back right now. And Canada is trying to take guns. They've already kind of disarmed everybody, but they're on a new push because they want to push this COVID thing, daily testing. They'll have a 1.5 million people a day that can't travel, because this bullcrap PCR test has an 82% false positive. So that means that at any one day there's going to be 2 million people that can't travel. And then when they get over their 14-day quarantine, there'll be another 2 million people. I mean, they put Kaylee, what's her name, the the president's press secretary, McInerney. She tested positive. They quarantined her for 14 days. What are they going to do? Well, I think she's out now. But in 14 days, when she comes out and tests positive again, what are they going to do, quarantine her for another 14 days? Because that test will test positive if you had the flu, a flu shot in 5 years, or you came in contact with the common cold. Yeah. It's baloney. It was never designed as a diagnostic test. They have never even taken this virus and isolated it. They don't even know that COVID is a virus. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, so the COVID I studied
this. This is the emperor has no clothes.
To
the max.
You can, and you know what? You take a day to read about it, and it's all busted to hell. And it's so important. I don't know why more people don't read about it, because you just spend a little time on it, and you see how fake it is. Do you know about the German group who's turned it into an international fraud claim?
Yeah, he's coming. That's coming out.
Yeah,
if we make it through this election, there's going to be lawsuits like you can't believe. I can't believe that they are still at it with such a vengeance. It's beyond me that they're still pretending like they're on top.
Oh, my.
And they're going to fight right to the bloody end with this charade of the whole COVID thing. This whole COVID thing was designed to take Trump out of office. The timing of it and everything was perfect.
Yeah.
And they timed it, and this has been planned for years. And you got me going. I got to stop. I got another somebody else.
Do you know about the Chinese dissident, the defector who's working with Giuliani, they have tapes of Hunter actually torturing 10-year-old girls and doing awful things to them?
There is horrible stuff out there. They have the tape with Uma Abedin and Hillary Clinton cutting the face off a girl and tortured her. I mean, this is depravity at its worst. And yes, that's all of them. And that's why God they scratched the eyeball of God, and he's going to slap them. So that's why I'm confident that even if the world is going to go down, they're going to get theirs. And nations have to be brought to justice, and that's in time. And nations can't be punished in eternity. They have to be punished now. So there's punishment coming for these nations. And just pray that he doesn't punish America for what we deserve, because we've got more blood on our hands in this country.
Well,
But we are his people, and this is the New Jerusalem, and there's a lot of buts and buts and buts. And I think enough people have prayed that he did turn his face to us and had mercy on us. And I'm hoping that, we stay raised up and we continue. I don't know what the end is or anything like that. I don't pretend to. But I do know that this is biblical in nature. Okay?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
No, we just have to keep that in mind, and we have to spread it, and we have to talk. And, this whole thing about social distancing and no gathering and mask is designed to keep us in this bubble, in this hole, so that we can't protest out. But I think Trump was very smart. He called his rallies peaceful protest. Right?
Oh no, really?
We need to do the same thing. We're not going to church. We're going to a peaceful protest.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you, I'm serious. This is what you need to do. And when the cop goes, comes and they go, you can't do that. No, we're having a peaceful protest. This is a peaceful protest. We're protesting to God about the depravity in the world, and this is a peaceful protest. And we're praying at the same time. So you need to leave now. But anyway.
Well, I just wanted to say that this Chinese defector, he read from these videos. He translated Chinese, which said, don't think that we are not going to keep this information on you. You have to make sure that Biden wins the presidency, and because we intend to control the Chinese people, the United Nations, the United States, and the presidency now and in the future. And I don't know if it's real, but if it is, it's terrible.
True. They've been controlling the presidency for a while, so
the Chinese.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true.
It's bad. It's worse than you think it is, and we're on the brink of the precipice. I mean, if we don't go over, it's a miracle. But anyway, it's getting late. I have one more person I want to get to, so I'm going to go ahead and let you go. Thanks a lot. Yeah, bye-bye.
Good night.
Mm. Okay, we got Drew from PA. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. Hello? You got to be there. I saved you enough time to answer the question or statement or whatever. Can you hear me? Maybe I put him to sleep with my rant. Drew from PA. Anybody else wants to get in the queue? We got 15 minutes. So speak now or forever hold your peace. I'm assuming everybody's hearing me. They were hearing me a second ago. I don't hear anything. I hear crickets. Can you hear me, Terry?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so
I'll talk to you.
Oh, we got Selena from Kansas. I'm going to open her. I don't know. I leave Drew there, but I don't know what happened to him. But
okay,
he's not answering her, she or whoever it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not a question. Draw. Thanks so much for that rant, as you call it. By God bless you. Thanks. I don't have a question. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. You made a statement. That qualifies.
Okay, great. Thought it was great. I'm going to send it out to a lot of people around. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay,
well,
bye.
We're close to ending. Nobody else is in there. I don't know what happened with Drew. I think I lost him. I didn't keep him open, so, you know.
I can't even think of anything. Sorry, I would ask you.
No, that's all right. It's close enough anyway. We always go over, so tonight we'll be a little under. So
okay. It's
been good, and I already went on one rant, and somebody live will get me on another. We'll be here till 1 o'clock. So anyway, thank you, everybody. I'm going to stop the recording, and we'll see you here same time, same station. Thank you, Brent. Thank you, John. Thank you, Jan. Jan, I got to talk to you when we get some time. Anyway, thank you, everybody. God bless, and keep your powder dry.